This, ladies and gentlemen, is why athletes tear muscles and have chronic trigger point syndromes in muscles, because they're overusing key muscles to compensate for muscles that are not working. And if you don't have a system of analysis, it's very, very hard to identify these problems. And this is why people just keep treating the spot that hurts. And that's why there's a very high re-injury rate amongst low back pain patients and others. Here's Grakovetsky's system. He was the one that really figured this system out. It's called the deep longitudinal system. What happens is when you're running or walking, as your foot comes forward to initiate stance phase, in other words, the heel's just about to strike the ground, the anterior tibialis muscle pulls the foot up into dorsiflexion in preparation for heel strike. That causes a sling tension. These two attach to the just above the first metatarsal joint here at the first cuneiform. And what happens is that dorsiflexion of the foot pulls on the peroneus longus tendon. The fascia of the peroneus longus is continuous with the biceps femoris. 18% of the force here is transferred up into the biceps, and it's summated, or it's stored in the fascia, again, like a giant rubber band. And the tension of the biceps femoris is passed into the sacrotuberous ligament. Right when your foot strikes the ground, the tension passed up into that sacrotuberous ligament causes the sacrum to go into counternutation, slight counternutation. As the transverse abdominis here, you see the black lines. Well, that transverse abdominis runs from one ilium to the next. So just prior to foot strike, the belly button comes in. You get that hoop tension effect. If that belly button moves in, what will that do to my ilium? Bring them together or apart? Yeah. Together. And because the ligaments of the SI joint are relatively non-stretchable, right when the foot's about to strike the ground, that belly button moves in. That locks the pelvis. This stabilizes the sacrum so that the superincumbent weight, when it presses down, can't tip the sacrum forward, okay? Because your axis of rotation on that sacrum is about right there, okay? So that tension is transferred up, and that stabilizes the sacrum along with the inner unit system. And then as the spine is rotating, this energy passes up through the thoracolumbar fascia system, the paraspinal system, and the multifidus muscles work to diminish the kinetic load to zero before it reaches the head. If it reaches the head, it rattles the brain, and that causes inflammation of the brain. Okay? Some of you may have had any physiotherapists in the room. One, you ever had a patient that said if they walk a couple of blocks or walk around the mall or go for a jog, they get a headache? Well, frequently in those people, what's happening is the kinetic energy is making it all the way up through the spinal system into the head, and it's rattling the brain, and it causes inflammation of the meninges and the covering of the brain. And also, our system is designed this way so that we reduce the kinetic energy to zero, and the last set of muscles that can do that is the suboccipital muscles. Any massage therapists in here? So you notice that a lot of people have trigger points in the suboccipitals. That's because when they're mechanically deficient back here or anywhere in the kinetic chain, the suboccipital muscles have to work like crazy to dissipate that kinetic force to zero before it makes it to the brain. One of the reasons is that we had to hunt for our food as primal beings. And we used to have to run and throw spears, and we had to ride horses and throw spears and shoot arrows and all sorts of stuff. If that kinetic energy does not zero out by the time it gets to your skull, your vision starts jumping all over the place, which you can easily experience. If you just tap your head, just take your hand and tap your head like that, it makes your visual field jump all over the place. And that would be very, very hard to be successful as a hunter. Remember, your kinetic forces running through your body are 4 to 7 times body weight at a running, at just a, like a jogging pace. So you've got a tremendous kinetic wave coming up through the body, and this inner unit system and outer unit system must work efficiently. Now, take that picture right there and imagine what's happening when someone does a lunge in the gym with weight on their back. Can you visualize that? So if this system breaks down, then you're going to have torque on joints. If the inner unit system's not working right, they're wearing a weight belt, they're pushing their belly button out, they lose the stabilizing effect of the pelvis, they lose the stabilizing effect of the spine, and they're highly susceptible to torsional loads on the SI joint, the back, the facet joints. The whole thing just gets repeatedly beat up, and it goes into a state of inflammation wherever the force is the greatest and wherever the force cannot be stabilized, and then they have low back pain, so they pull their belt another notch tighter, okay, until they can't lift anymore. And they go through cycles, then their back hurts, they got to stop lifting, they rest for a while, and they come back and do it all over again. Okay? And you can see this all over the industry. Now, when you look at how we generate force, how the outer unit is recruited, you saw the previous diagram, right? Just prior, your stabilization has to happen prior to foot strike. So the inner unit's going to fire just prior to foot strike. If you look at how the inner unit works and the function of the transverse abdominis in gait, it looks like a sinusoidal wave like that. Just when the foot's about to strike the ground, there's a recruitment of the inner unit. As you move across and you go on to the other leg, the contraction, the energy reduces. In other words, the amount of force or tension in the inner unit reduces. There's always a little bit of background tension, but when the foot's just about to strike the ground, you see it increase in the recruitment, and then as you move on to the next leg, a decrease. So it's like a giant pump. This inner unit system actually not only works to stabilize the joints, but that reciprocal tension wave drives lymphatic fluid through the body, drives blood through the body, and helps people stay healthy. It delivers the immune system to the body via the lymphatic system, and it helps increase motility of the internal organs. So this is much more than just a musculoskeletal system. As a matter of fact, anybody that has varicose veins or even hemorrhoid problems frequently has a dysfunctional inner unit, because when they have to walk, the pump doesn't work anymore, and gravity pulls all the fluid down into their body, swells their veins up, and works their heart to death. Not quite to death, but it works their heart very hard. So frequently when I have people that have health issues like that, one of the first things I have to do is reestablish the function in this giant pump.
Excuse me, does the breathing have anything to do with it? Will that?
Yeah, we're going to come to that. Yes, breathing is very important to do with that. Yeah. Okay, so when you're in the force generating phase here, you can see the force has to come from the foot and the ankle. Why is that?
Contact with the ground.
It's the first contact with the ground. It can't come from anywhere else. You can't propel yourself in the air, okay, unless you're a bird. So basically the force generation now works backwards through the system. So you remember the pebble in the bathtub, right? It goes from the center of the bathtub out, which is the inner unit. And when it hits the edge of the bathtub, which is like the foot striking the ground, the kinetic pulse comes backwards. It goes foot, ankle, leg, pelvis, core, shoulder, girdle, arm, hand. So now it works back up through the system. So if you're throwing a ball, first you stabilize with the inner unit. And when you start to go and push off that leg, now the force comes up through the leg, through the trunk, and out the arm. Okay? So it's inner unit down, outer unit up, through, and out the arm. Okay? And that's exactly what I did with Mark. I basically tied his leg and his arm together by using his trunk. Now, if you look at my little model of the pirate ship here, your spine is really like a mast, and it has 24 mobile segments, and each of them are held together by these little muscles like the multifidus, the intertransversary, interspinales, the rotatories, the spinalis, the semispinalis, then you got your transverse abdominis. So this mast and these little muscles are representative of the inner unit. Can you see that? These big guy wires represent rectus abdominis, external oblique, and erector spinae muscles. Now, if you were to do any exercises that were to develop these big A, B, and C guy wires without developing the D small muscles, what would be the potential? You get these people that go to all these aerobics classes and all these ab blast classes, and they just do hundreds of different kinds of crunches, but they don't do anything to develop these inner unit muscles or correspondingly develop the erector muscles. What's going to happen to the mast after a while? It's going to go in the direction. Whenever you exercise a muscle in a shortened range, what do you do with the muscle? You shorten it. And when you're laying on the floor, you're exercising the abdominals in less than 50% of the normal range. The human spine will extend 45 to 70 degrees, but you can only flex it 30 degrees in a crunch. So you're working less than normal range of motion doing sit-ups and crunches. And over time, you drop sarcomeres off the rectus abdominis, and it pulls the head, the trunk down and forward, and you've got poor posture. And how many of you were at my last lecture yesterday? And if you get that kind of an effect, what's that do to your ability to rotate your spine? Makes it a lot worse, doesn't it? Okay, so hallelujah. I mean, this information's been around for a long time. I've been preaching to people since 1992 when I finished doing a lot of my research with my calipers I invented for measuring this stuff that we shouldn't be doing crunches. And even to this day, people in the industry tell me I'm crazy. I even got people in lecturing and conferences that say, oh, you know, Paul Cech's wrong. Well, I can show you hundreds of case histories of people that I've measured, and I can almost show you hands down that the more sit-ups and crunches they do without doing corresponding extension exercises like deadlifts and other things, front squats to counterbalance them, the more kyphotic and lordotic they get, and the worse their rotation is, and the more joint and back problems and extremity problems they have. Okay, and I'm one of the few guys in the world that can say that with all honesty, because I do very comprehensive measurements on every single one of my patients. Every joint, all the range of motion, their posture, their weight shift, everything. I got pages of documentation on each person, and I can track it all. Most people just guess at it. Okay, so here we go now with the weight belt. So you can see how this thing creates three-dimensional stability of the spine. The people that wear weight belts, by the way, almost always have a dysfunctional inner unit. The reason they're wearing a weight belt is because, why do most people wear a weight belt? They have to compensate for what they don't have, but quite often it's because they had back pain. Their back started to hurt, or they were told by their friends, well, if you're going to lift heavy weights, you should wear a belt. Okay, so some people that don't have back pain end up acquiring it as a byproduct of wearing this belt. So what happens is when you cinch that belt down, as you see here, it puts pressure on the abdominal wall and stimulates the receptors of the skin, which are called exteroceptors. And whenever you, remember the body's a sensory motor system, right? Sensory motor. It always senses before it moves. So when you put a weight belt on, you're triggering the sensory system in the skin, so the natural inclination is to move toward the pressure. That's why when people cinch weight belts up, and when women wear corsets, they just relax their abdominal wall. It's a natural thing to do. The body is a very energy-efficient system, so it says, okay, well, if you're going to create intra-abdominal pressure for me, then there's no need for me to do it. So it just stops using your inner unit, okay? So, but what research clearly shows, and this is research on very, very comprehensive medical grade form fitted corsets that are far more technically advanced than these weight belts. Research showed that there was no increase in spinal stabilization at all wearing these things. None. The spine now is free to move because look, your three dimensional locking system is dependent on tension in the thoracolumbar fascia. But if you push the belly button out, you take the tension off the fascia and the vertebra is free to just slop around in there. So your trunk becomes stiff because you got this great big weight belt cinched around you. You know, your ribs rest right on top of it. You know how the weight belt fits, right? So you suck it on like a horse's saddle. So you can't move very well because you're restricted in movement, but inside the body cavity, the spine is still very easy to sublux, just like your vertebra pop. You put a load on someone's back and that whole spine will just twist up. So your trunk's still, but inside you're all torqued up. Then you're really in trouble because remember how the outer unit system works. So here I am doing a deadlift or maybe I'm doing a row. Watch this. I've got no inner unit. I'm wearing a weight belt. I'm pushing my belly button out or I'm not using it at all. I'm leaning forward doing a single arm dumbbell row. Are my lats involved? Just go, yes, Paul, because they're the primary link between the spine and the shoulder. Biggest muscle of the back. Only muscle that runs from your spine to your shoulder. And anytime you're abducting or extending the shoulder, horizontal abduction, you're using your lats as part of the action. And what muscle has to work to hold me in this position on this leg? Your glutes. So now you've got this massive rotational torque around your body, but if your belly's hanging out, what's that going to do to your spine? It's going to twist your spine because you've got nothing to counterbalance it, okay? And then if you get low back pain and you irritate the L5 nerve root, for example, it'll shut down the glute. But if the lat keeps going and there's no glute to counterbalance the tension, now you've got a massive torque on the spine. You're totally screwed up. You think that happens very often? Oh, yeah. That's made me a lot of money. How do you think I could pay the artist to make them slides? There was a genius chiropractor by the name of Major Bertrand Dejarnet who developed what is called the sacro-occipital technique of spinal therapy. And Dejarnet showed us that we had a number of paired working relationships in the body. What he showed is that Whenever the respiratory system is threatened because the musculoskeletal system's not working correctly, when some of the joints get locked up, like if you get an SI joint lockage or you get a blockage at C01 up in the atlas or anywhere through the system, the respiratory system gets threatened. If the respiratory system gets threatened and the respiratory pump cannot work, the body cannot pump cerebral spinal fluid. Does anyone not know what cerebral spinal fluid is? You all know what that is. You all know that's important fluid, right? That's like the comparison of blood, but for the nervous system. It cleans, nourishes, and bathes the nervous system. Okay, so what happens is because the diaphragm is the primary pump mechanism that drives the cerebral spinal pump mechanism. There's others. The diaphragm and what's down at in the sacrum. As you breathe in, you always get taller. Okay, and as you exhale, you get shorter. Okay, so when you breathe in, cerebral spinal fluid rushes back up into the ventricles of the brain. When you breathe out, it comes down. Okay. So you need this pump mechanism to keep your nervous system bathed and healthy and nourished and clean. That's what helps eliminate the toxins out of the nervous system. So anything that locks up or disrupts the mechanics of the joints of the body that stops that cerebral spinal pump mechanism from working causes a compensation in the body. In my clinic, I use very, very expensive calibrated scales that have about 165 pressure sensors throughout each platform, and they will measure exactly the same. It doesn't matter if you put a weight on the very far tip corner of the scale or in the dead center, it'll give you the exact same weight right down to the hundredth of a pound. And what I do with these specialized scales is I put people on them and I have them stand with half the foot on the front scale, half on the back scale, and I measure how much they go forward and backward. If the sway forward and backward equates to more than 5 pounds forward and backward on my scale, I know that they probably are a Category 1, which means that their nervous system has figured out that they have to run the pump mechanism. It's got a pump. It's like a pump handle. So what's happening, it's got to cause pressure changes and motion changes, because remember how I said that abdominal wall worked to pump fluids? Well, the diaphragm and the spine have to be in constant motion in order to keep the cerebral spinal pump mechanism working. So in the healthy body, the natural expansion of the rib cage, lengthening and shortening of the spine is enough to drive the cerebral spinal pump. But if something gets locked up that disrupts the respiratory mechanism, then the body starts compensating by going like this. How many of you assess posture on people? Have you ever noticed that people stump something, they sway back and forth like that? Well, that's your first indicator that they probably have either an SI joint problem, a lumbar dysfunction, or something locking up the pump mechanism, because the body starts compensating like this. When the body can't compensate like that anymore, it starts compensating going left to right. When I put them on my scales like this, if I see more than a 5 pound shift to either side, I know they've entered phase 2. Phase 2 is a dangerous place to be, because when they remember, lateral motion is coupled with what in the lumbar spine? Rotation. So you get these people that are in the gym bending over, doing deadlifts and rows and cable work and all sorts of stuff, throwing medicine balls, and their body is spending the whole day going like this, which also is rotational torque. And if they've already got a subluxation in there, it puts tremendous wear and tear on the discs. So phase 3 or category 3, finally it wears out the annulus and the nucleus bulges out. And if it hits a nerve root, you're in big trouble. You get sciatic pain, etc. This is a common end stage result of compensation for a dysfunctional cerebral spinal pump mechanism. And now you tell me, how does that relate to wearing a weight belt? It's okay, I got all day. It's really quite simple. Why do we say people usually wear weight belts?
Because they don't have the natural...
They've got back pain. And when you got back pain, do your joints work right? Can your cerebral spinal pump system be working right then? No. So what they're doing is they're putting a Band-Aid on a problem that has very far-reaching effects. They're not going after and addressing the problem. They're maintaining the problem. And when you put a weight belt on, can you lift more or less usually? more because it adds false stability to the body and allows them to load the dysfunctional system, which accelerates the rate at which they end up right there. Is that not common?
No.
Yes, ma'am? Did you want to say something?
I was just going to answer that question, but you just answered
that. Oh, I'm sorry. I would love to have let you do that.
That's right, too.
Good.
I have just a question. When you do this wing, is it with breathing in and out or just the person standing?
Well, they're standing there, so they're going to breathe automatically.
Yeah.
They don't even know what I'm looking at.
It's just a natural movement that they have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's natural to sway.
Yeah.
The healthy body will always sway around, but it doesn't sway more than 5 pounds in either direction. It's too stressful to the body if it does. Okay, so now we get to inner unit, outer unit activation, and I want to tell you how a belt can be useful to the injured people. There is actually an effective application for belts, but usually it shouldn't be a belt. It should be a corset. You know the difference between a weight belt and a corset? A corset is a much more technically designed system. It often has two layers. It has a thinner layer where you pull it, lock it, and then you pull the outer layer on. Now, most people don't even know how to put belts and corsets on properly. Who can tell me how to put a belt or a corset on properly?
Sucking
in's helpful, but where should you be when you're doing it?
Lying down.
You got it.
Wow.
How many people have you ever seen put a weight belt on or a corset on laying on their back?
When I was young and stupid, I used to do it lying down, but I've never seen anybody else. They used to think I was nuts because I was doing that.
Yeah, but you were young and smart, you see. I can tell by your haircut. Okay. So when you're laying down, the pressure in the intervertebral disc is only 25% of what it is standing. So that opens up the space between the sacrum and the bottom rib. So when you lay down, you're decompressed, you're at your longest, and then you draw your belly button in and you suck that belt down. So it gets between the bottom rib and the iliac crest, and it actually keeps tension and pressure off of your spine. And when you suck it down tight, as soon as you stand up, the organs drop down and it creates natural hoop tension. If you just suck your belly in like that, usually when people suck their belly in, they activate the rectus abdominis, which compresses their spine even more than the weight that's on their trunk. So their pressure in their disc goes up to about 130-140%. So they're actually loading and then wrapping something around an already loaded spine, which is relatively ineffective, comparatively speaking, to putting it on right. Whenever anyone has an injured back or needs to wear a corset, they should lay on their back with their knees bent, feet flat. They should inhale, exhale fully without flexing the muscles, and cinch the belt down firm, or the corset. Then when they stand up, they have a much greater sense of decompression. Very few people do that. Now, as you remember your inner unit system, what's the primary purpose of the inner unit? It's a what system?
Stabilizer,
but the way it stabilizes by creating stiffness. You understand that? When it tightens, when the diaphragm tightens, the transverse abdominis tightens, the pelvic floor tightens, and the multifidus tightens, it actually creates stiffness in the system. It makes the spine quite stiff. When anatomists take all the muscles off the spine and stand the spine up, a healthy spine like a 20-year-old cadaver or something from a car accident that got killed, what they'd find is that the spine can only take about 2.5 pounds of pressure before it collapses with the ligaments intact, okay? So in order for you to hold any kind of weight at all in your hands or your body, the inner unit systems have to add stiffness to the spine to give the outer unit systems a working platform, okay? So what's really important here, and here's your dividing factor for who needs a belt and who doesn't. If you ask someone to do what I had Mark do, draw their belly button in, and they say that increases their back pain, what does that mean?
Well, the pressure is pushing against something that's flaring out
or that's
not where it should be.
Or that's already painful, right? So if you have a painful facet joint and you pull your belly button, and that's going to put compression into the spine, that's going to make it hurt worse. And what does pain do in the central nervous system? Pain always causes inhibition. So it shuts the muscles down that you're trying to use to stabilize your trunk. So anytime you draw the belly button in and activate the stiffening system, if it causes pain, you're going to reflexively shut down that system. And then when you go pick up a dumbbell or a barbell, it's only going to get worse. Okay? So anyone that has increased discomfort in the low back when they draw their belly button in needs to wear a medical grade corset, and they need to do the corrective exercises that I have designed in a number of my different resources to rehabilitate the inner unit system. And they need to find a good physio or a doctor that knows how to rehabilitate the spine to find out, why do they have a painful segment? Is it a disc? Is it an inflamed nerve root? Is it a facet joint? Do they have a fractured vertebral end plate? Do they have a spondylolysis, a low lysthesis, a retrolysthesis? Do they have degenerative disc changes? Do they have osteoarthritic changes? I mean, there's a number of things that can do that. But we know in the gym that those people are high-risk people, okay? So they always wear a corset, but they take the corset off while they're doing their exercises. And as soon as the pain no longer happens by pulling the belly button in, you get rid of the corset, okay? But you have to bring these people carefully along. So this is why you see a lot of people with low back pain, because when the abdominal wall, the inner unit doesn't work, one of the first things that happens is the brain starts overusing some muscles and underusing others. They go to doing all their crunches and they shorten these upper abdominals, which pulls the head down and forward. But as I'm going to show you in a little bit, the lower abdominals are actually part of the low back. Okay, most people don't know this, but the lower abdominals are not abdominal muscles, they're back muscles. Okay, so what happens is anytime you have pain in a lumbar segment, pain will cause inhibition of any of the muscles on the same reflex pathway. The lower abdominals communicate with every vertebra from T12 all the way down to the sacrum, okay? So frequently what you see is when the pain shuts off the stabilizer muscles, and these big muscles get hyperactive to try to compensate, and that causes excessive compression, torsion, and shear in the spine. And the next thing you know, you got some guy laying on his back doing one of these ab blast classes, and he goes, oh man, every time I do a crunch, it hurts my back. Well, that's because he's either bulging a disc out, or he's got such excessive recruitment of the wrong muscles, it creates massive trigger point syndromes and soft tissue dysfunctions, and that disrupts the joint mechanics, and then you're in trouble. So how do we go about getting rid of the belt? Well, the first thing we have to do is inner unit isolation exercises, and then activate the weak muscles that are shut down, which can only be done by getting rid of the pain, which may require the help of a skilled doctor or therapist. Once you get that inner unit functioning correctly, you have to integrate the inner unit with the outer unit. And only then do you go into integrated strength training exercises like your typical cable rowing, functional free weight exercises. And only after you've developed this base should you ever do sport specific exercise. But here I find it very interesting that throughout our industry today, we've got all sorts of classes. What would you call Tai Bo? Where does that fit on this scale here?
Sport specific.
Sport specific. So how many of the women do you think that bought Billy Blank's videos and went home and started throwing all these kicks had developed all these prerequisites before they started doing functional movements? You'd be lucky if 1 in 100 could handle that. Once again, that program had to have been sponsored by orthopedic surgeons, because they're the ones making all the money off of that, them and Billy. Okay, so you look at all these classes all over these conferences, all these sport-specific movements, throwing medicine balls, and all this high-speed stuff. Most of you in this room, I would be willing to bet you that in this room right now, and you guys are probably some of the healthiest people in Canada, I would be willing to bet you that 8 out of 10 of you have dysfunctional inner units and don't qualify to even do this without this type of training first. Okay? And you're the healthier people in the room. Okay? So the point is, people go do this stuff, and their bodies change a little bit, and they sweat and they burn calories. But the question is, how long do they go before they're hurt? You know, we are such an aesthetically driven society that we think that changes in aesthetics is actually progress. But if you're looking good and feeling terrible, have we really done you a service? That's what I want to know. So we have to be able to use technologies to isolate. I teach this whole system of assessment and correction in my scientific core conditioning program. and other programs. If you're focusing on females, then I have another program for females that go into these technologies whereby you use blood pressure cuff technologies and other things to assess the strength and the endurance of the transverse abdominis muscle. For example, when you're laying flat on your stomach with no movement of the spine or the low back, the athlete or the individual should be able to inhale and draw at least 10 millimeters mercury pressure off of the cuff, which means their belly button's coming this way. But you'd be shocked to find that when I tell people, okay, draw your belly button and lift it up off the cuff, almost always the pressure rises, which means what?
Pushing.
It means they're pushing, which they've learned to do what? Wearing a weight belt, push their belly out and use the wrong muscles. If you're pushing, what muscles are you using? Rectus Chuck Norris. Okay. Okay. So what you see then is we've got all these faulty recruitment patterns. And I can say this with great confidence, you guys, because I've rehabilitated thousands of people. I've been doing this for 18 years. And most of my career, I spent right in a gym or next to a gym. I've had hundreds of these cases. Okay. So I'm not just sitting here barking. I'm telling you the truth. So we got to then implement corrective exercises, which are beyond this class. I do a whole two-day class on that alone. One of the first things that you can do that's quite easy is you can start activating the transverse abdominis. Many people that have low back pain develop what's called sensory motor amnesia, which means when they pull their belly button and it hurts, because it causes stiff compression on the painful, so they learn not to do that. They avoid pain, right? The body always moves away from pain and toward pleasure. Just remember that. I'm sure you know. Okay? So what happens is we've got to get them in a horizontal, non-weight-bearing position because many of them have learned not to use the muscles, so they develop what Thomas Hanna called sensory motor amnesia. If you haven't read the book Somatics by Thomas Hanna, it's a very good book to teach you about some real basics of how people lose the ability to use their body correctly. So what we do is we get them on their hands and knees. We have them take a deep diaphragmatic breath. The diaphragm drops down and the weight of the internal organs on the abdominal wall stimulates the gamma nervous system because it creates stretch in the abdominal wall. That stretches the spindle cells and it makes the sensory portion of the brain that communicates with the abdominal wall more aware that the abdominal muscles are actually there. Where when they're standing up, they've just lost control of the muscle and they have such poor control and the weight-bearing joints are loaded, so there's reflex inhibition of the muscle so they don't use it because they're in pain. But you get them on their hands and knees, now you can trigger the muscle into working using the gamma nervous system, and then you have them inhale, exhale. If you just blow through pursed lips and put your finger in your belly button, you'll feel your transverse abdominals will fire. Feel that? Just like a trumpet player blowing? That activates the transverse abdominis. So I have them take a deep breath and then blow and leave the breath out for 10 seconds or as long as they can till they feel the need to breathe. And that starts activating the corset and it reactivates the pump. Now, what happens with corsets and belts is they develop abnormal lumbopelvic rhythm. In other words, the rate that the spine flexes relative to pelvic movement gets disrupted because although they're wearing belts, they're not able to stabilize their spinal segments. Here you see my example that when they wear a belt, it's like excessive gross stabilization. They cinch the belt down so it holds everything overly stiff. And because it attaches under the rib cage into the pelvis, it blocks the movement of the upper lumbar vertebra. Now the upper lumbar vertebra are just squashed. They can still move at a segmental level, but they're generally squashed and immobilized. Because remember, that bottom rib's right there, so it just holds things stiff. Okay. Then what happens is as they bend forward, research shows that they often have excessive movement at L5-S1 because the belts, you know, the belts are 4 to 6 inches wide, right? And they're tight. So it makes you stiff in the upper lumbar region. It makes it so you can't bend forward. So the only place you can bend now is at L5-S1. It causes excessive lower lumbar motion. Who can tell me what the most commonly herniated disc in the human spine is? Okay. L5S1. Okay? So think about it. All these factory workers and store clerks, and they're making them all wear these belts. They're just setting them up for L5S1 disc bulges because it just wears it out. Okay? So as I said, it encourages faulty recruitment of the abdominal wall, resulting in loss of the ability to stabilize the SI joint. So we have to re-educate, because what's happening is as they're bending forward, you remember that thoracolumbar fascia system and I showed you how it extended the spine? Well, when they bend forward, you see how that belly's hanging out? They're not able to stabilize. They're not activating the internal, the inner unit system. So we've got to re-educate that. And all you got to do is do what I call use the world's greatest weight belt. You tie a, you have them stand up, draw the belly button in, tie a string around the waist, tie it in a knot. They don't draw in super hard, just enough to make an oblique line, tie it in a knot. Then every time they bend forward, if their guts fall out, it puts tension on the string and it's a little bit uncomfortable. It digs into your skin. So it tells them, activate your inner unit. It retrains them very functionally, very efficiently, and in the functional movement patterns. Now what we're doing is we're doing inner unit, outer unit integration. We're teaching, and I have women wearing these things around the house. I have men wearing them on the job. I have housewives picking their kids up wearing these things. I have guys that work for, you know, water companies delivering water bottles, all wearing their strings because they need to be constantly reminded, because the pain has rewritten the motor pathways. It only takes about 350 repetitions to build a motor program. And if it's a faulty motor program, it takes about 3,500 to 5,000 repetitions to override that faulty program. So it can take anywhere from weeks to months of repetitive training. And what's very important for you to understand is that the movement patterns are specific. The brain only records the information in the pattern that you're working in. So here, this guy's only learning to integrate the inner and outer unit in what pattern? What's he doing there? The bend pattern. Okay, so he can do that, but that doesn't mean he's going to be able to, if he's a flight attendant, that doesn't mean he's going to be able to push the cart down the aisle and stabilize his spine, because his brain only knows how to do it bending. So we've got to rewrite the software in all the key patterns. If you take the lumbar corset away from this guy, you better give him something to make sure he activates his inner unit, because it's even worse to have the corset off or the belt off, and now they don't use their abdominals. So now they just got a great big Budweiser tumor hanging over their belt, and that's no good. So the key patterns that must be rehabilitated, because in my research, I've found that these are what are called generalized motor programs. They're the working foundation that all the other movement patterns become or are made of. For example, when you throw a ball, that's a lunge, a twist, and a push, all tied together neurologically. The brain ties three patterns together. So if you have a baseball player, for example, who's got low back pain, who's been wearing a corset, you're going to have to use the string. First, you're going to have to build the inner unit up. Then you're going to have to use the string once they've activated the inner unit properly. And you're going to have to first teach them how to lunge properly. Then you're going to have to teach them how to do any kind of rotational exercises. Or if you can do it, you can integrate a single arm cable push and he'll draw that belly button in and integrate those muscles, but you can't use heavy weights. If you use heavy weights, if you use something more than they can do while breathing naturally, that's your dividing line. If they can't breathe naturally and do the movement, what is going to happen that's going to screw your training up? You're going to get rectus abdominis. You're going to get outer unit firing in absence of inner unit. So in order to make sure you don't get too much outer unit and that you only keep the load low enough that you primarily work on, you're going to get some outer unit, but it's not going to be the dominant recruitment pathway, okay? As soon as you start loading somebody heavily, the big muscles turn on, but if they turn on in absence of the stabilizer, you just torque the spine up. So you always want to use light weights. You can even just use, this is one place where I have people use stretch cords at home, just something to give them a sense of resistance so they can appreciate the movement pattern. And then they learn and they get fixed up quite quickly. So here you can see a posterior oblique system pattern, a pulling pattern. There you can see an anterior oblique system pattern. So now I'm training functional pushing versus functional pulling. So I'm training these things with the string and I choose a load. And as they get better and better, I increase the load. But I only increase the load when I know that they reflexively activate the inner unit without having to think about it. Okay, they become consciously competent. Then they become subconsciously competent, which means they don't think about it. It automatically does it. If you push them fat too fast, they just get hurt. And there you see a twist pattern, a woodchop pattern, which is more of a rotational pattern. So these are just examples of movement patterns that I use, because these movement patterns are like the infrastructure of almost all movements that we do. I wrote all about this in my book, Movement That Matters. If you want to read a book, have any of you seen that book? Okay, so you know that it discusses all those movement patterns in there and how the body learns to move. These are important resources for you, because you got to understand how to do this. Do you think there's many people in the gym that need this today? Pretty much. Okay. Okay, so troubleshooting, I'm going to have to go a little fast here, but I'll get you the points across. So when your back won't stop hurting and you can't shake the belt, so you've done all this stuff and people still hurt, you got to figure out why. Well, first of all, anytime you have back pain, you better make sure those internal organs are functioning correctly. What you'll see here is that your internal organs, your vessels, your muscles, and your joints all come in and they communicate through the nervous system, okay? So you see strong, sustained sensory impulses coming into the dorsal horn. Well, the organs and all the muscles and all the joints and the skin all come into the dorsal horn and they communicate to this common interneuron. Right here in this pathway, there's an interneuron that goes up to the brain. So the brain actually only gets the message from the interneuron. The brain cannot differentiate from one level to the next whether the pain came from an organ, from a vessel, from skin, from muscle. It doesn't know where the pain came from. All the brain knows is T7 hertz. So it actually makes everything on that circuit react as though it was in pain. Every vessel, every organ, all the tissues on that segmental level respond as though they're in pain. I figured that out after being 2 years in the business.
You should go and you should teach chiropractors, because they don't do this and they should be the first ones.
Well, they actually should know this, because this is taught in most chiropractic schools.
But it's never mentioned. I worked for a chiropractor for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's never mentioned.
They can't make money doing this, because if you do this, you fix people. They don't come back for adjustments. Okay, so my conclusions for the lecture. Whenever, just remember, a smart core equals less injury. Core training must be based on individual needs. That means your client's needs and core demand, not on aesthetics and not on personal belief systems. Belts should never be used as tradition, and bodybuilders should not train athletes and workers like bodybuilders. What do bodybuilders primarily use to make their muscles big? Now, we always have to remember viscerosomatic. Organ-muscle relationship should always be respected and investigated. If people aren't responding and you don't know how to do this, if they're not responding well within a couple of weeks of proper exercise, you need to find someone that knows how to assess these internal organ pathways. Otherwise, you're going to spend months and months getting nothing done. Okay? Thank you guys for coming. Hope you enjoyed the lecture.
For more information on books or other products mentioned in this audio program, or for information on the Czech Institute, please contact us. You can visit our website at www.chekinstitute.com. That's www.chekinstitute.com.